You're listening to 1 minute and 43 seconds, episode 54.
You guys doing good?
Yeah, I'm doing great. We haven't done this in a while, so I'm excited.
I know. So just got to do the intro, right? So today we have our returning guests, Elaine and Amber, here.
Hello, listeners.
I know it seems silly, but I got to introduce you for the people.
Of course.
All right, well, enough of the silly business, all right? We've got serious things to talk about.
Focus.
Okay. Are you guys ready for this?
Yes.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, we haven't done one like this together. So, yeah, there's that. So we're all familiar.
Like what?
Well, like what we're about to talk about. So typically what we've done... what have we done together? We've done missing persons,
mm-hmm.
and we've done unsolved murders. Okay. Mm-hmm. If we scroll back to some of the episodes we've done together, Elaine, we did the story of Mary Morris and Mary Morris, two women named Mary Morris that were murdered within 3 days of each other. We did that. Let's see. We did the grisly murder of Okie Alkite. Y'all remember that one?
Yep.
Yes.
I think this was, it was all of us. We did the disappearance of Ray Grecar, the district attorney from Pennsylvania. You remember that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember his name.
Yeah, that one was crazy. You're going to have to go refresh yourself. We also did the murder of Elizabeth Barraza, who was tragically gunned down in her front yard early in the morning during a rummage sale. Yep. So my point is, we've done all these, but the one we're doing today, well, the few that we're doing today, it's a bit different because today we're talking about John and Jane Doe's.
Oh.
Did you guys know that as of 2023, there were about 14,000 unidentified people in the United States?
Holy crap. Yeah. Like unidentified people or unidentified bodies?
Bodies. I mean, if they were alive, Elaine, you could ask them who they were.
No, but remember we did that one about missing a leg.
Yes.
She didn't know.
Good news about that. Yeah, that was good memory, Elaine. That was Chyna Black. She is a woman living in an assisted living facility in Detroit. She was a living Jane Doe. She had no memory of who she was and where she came from. But the good news is I was in contact with the police that were investigating that.
Yeah.
And somebody told me that it's on its way to being solved.
Oh.
So I should probably follow up on that because I would love to hear. At the time, they couldn't share too much, but they said it's on its. They were confident it was on its way to being solved.
Wow. So, yeah, I'd be really curious if you hear any updates.
Yeah,
I will share them for sure. And sorry, I didn't mean to make fun of you, Elaine. Of course, yes. There are a few situations where there are.
Yeah.
It's very rare, but today we're going to be talking about a few cases of unidentified remains and the circumstances behind their discovery and kind of the speculation that has gone in to it. So, like I said, there's 14,000 unidentified bodies about in 2023 at least, which is just, it's crazy to think about because it's just like, it's so sad in a way because it's like, well, in many ways, it's like no one comes forward to claim these people,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's sad because they have a story. They were human beings. And for whatever reason, they have never been identified. Yeah. So that's what we're going to talk about today. I have three cases in particular. I was going to bring to you guys, and then depending on how things go, I could share a few more. That works for you.
Awesome. Yeah.
All right. So the first one I'm going to talk about today is called Becca. I found this to be really an intriguing story, and I have a lot of questions about it. So I'm going to say what's up, and let's hear what you guys think. So
okay.
Monday, June 3rd, 1991. A man by the name of Eduardo Colin checks into a Super 8 motel in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Now, Eduardo is a local truck driver, and he rents out a room for two, and he's assigned room 233. He's scheduled to check out the next day by 11 a.m. However, he never checks out. For whatever reason, this goes unnoticed, and he doesn't check out on time. And 2 days later, somebody finally realizes that.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So.
That's a little fishy in itself.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if the hotel just wasn't busy or whatever. But so, like I said, he checks in on Monday, June 3rd. And they finally, you know, raise the alarm to this on June 5th. Okay. So this is when the security guard goes to the room to check to see what's going on. Now the room is locked from the inside. So the guard has to use a screwdriver to open the door. At first glance, everything seems normal, although he does notice several bottles of liquor on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Hotel party, whatever, right? So like I said, everything seems normal, but that all changes when the security guard goes into the bathroom where he makes a very gruesome discovery. There, I should have said this in the beginning. If you're sensitive to this kind of thing, you could skip this episode. Some of the details in here are going to be not great. So he goes into the bathroom and he makes a very gruesome discovery. He finds the badly decomposed body of a deceased woman. And she is hanging from the shower by a suitcase strap.
Gosh.
God.
Yeah. Yeah. Not great. The woman is estimated to be about 140 pounds and between 25 and 35 years old. She was white, possibly of Hispanic descent. And the medical examiner noted that she had no noticeable scars, marks, or tattoos. Curiously, though, the unidentified woman had heroin in her system at the time of her death.
Oh.
Okay. Now, a few other things to make note of at the scene. So, remember I said the table had bottles of liquor or whatever? There was also a scale on the table with the name George Martinez written on it.
And
it's believed that this may have been a scale that was used to weigh packages of drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Also on the table was a photo. This is the crazy part. All right. There on the table, there's a photo of this unidentified woman alive with a man.
Oh,
so let me show you the photo. And the photo in itself is not disturbing. So I won't, no trigger warning there.
Okay.
So this photo is found on the table. And this woman is believed to be the woman who was found hanging in the bathroom.
Oh, my God.
Here is a facial reconstruction. And we'll post this on Instagram, of course. These are reconstructions. I'm not sure, because in a lot of these Jane John Doe cases, you can, oh, here's a picture of the scale, right? So it says George Martinez, and there's the photo back here. Can you guys see that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so that's what they found on the table, okay?
Wow.
Yeah. Now, there's this unidentified, that these two people, the photo of these two people, the woman is the woman that was found deceased. Mm-hmm. Now, as for the man in the photo, the hotel employee who had checked in, this guy Eduardo, said that was Eduardo. Okay?
Oh.
Yeah.
In the photo.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And police believe the photo was taken very soon before the woman died at a local mall photo booth. So I'm not sure how they know that, but I'm guessing there was some sort of sighting of them for them, or somehow they were able to determine that they believe that the photo was taken at a mall, at like a photo booth. Okay.
Okay.
Now check this out. If it wasn't weird already, Eduardo, at the time he checked into the hotel, he provided all legitimate information except for the license plate number on his car, which was fake for some reason.
Weird.
It said that it would be several years before Eduardo's family could be located. And by the time they found him, Eduardo had passed away several years prior due to natural causes.
Oh, okay.
I know.
Natural causes. He wasn't that old.
I know. It's frustrating. Trust me. I'll wait to say my thoughts. I just have a couple more details to get through, and then we can go there. Now another interesting thing, right? So they find his family. They learn Eduardo's passed away years ago. Now, they take a look at the photo. They say they have no idea who the woman is. But they say that the man is not Eduardo.
What?
Yeah. They say that's not Eduardo. And, yeah, they don't know who the woman is. Okay?
So he, like, stole somebody's information?
I have no clue, man. But check this out, okay? There was an update in this. As recently as 2021, investigators said they received a tip that this woman may have been named Becca or Rebecca, and that she may have been from Los Angeles County. She reportedly flew from LA or Burbank to Albuquerque. As of today, the woman called Becca has never been identified.
Wow.
What?
So that's what I have on this. Thoughts?
So the hotel employee was confident that it was him in the picture.
And she wasn't with him when he checked in?
No. He checked in. That's what's weird. There's so many questions I have, okay? All right, so what I have here, and this is according to Unidentified Wiki, which is a database that talks about Jane and John Doe's, right? The picture shows the woman and another man whom the motel employees identified as Eduardo. That's the only information I've been able to find. It's just as basic as that. They said it was Eduardo. Now, let's assume the family wouldn't have any reason to lie. I trust them, obviously, more than the hotel employees of knowing their family member, right?
Right.
I don't know. If they knew that Eduardo was into some sketchy stuff, then they might be lying because they don't want him tied to that case.
Yeah.
They would want to do anything to protect him.
Yeah. You guys might find this interesting. Here are some pictures from the scene. Nothing graphic. I will, of course, warn you if there is. This is the table. You can see there's cigarettes. There's several bottles of beer here. There's the scale here.
Mm-hmm.
There's the photo here. This looks like a cigarette or something, maybe.
Is that a purse and a wallet?
A purse and a wallet. I should have gone over that. Yes. So they found the woman's belongings.
Information in there.
Yeah, I guess not.
Weird.
Here is a reconstruction someone did of the woman. I mean, here's my thing. The police clearly are onto something. If they got this tip, they have a possible name. They have a possible journey that she took, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think of the fact that she had heroin in her system?
I mean, maybe. I don't know. Maybe if they were there, you know, like you said, hotel party and something went wrong and she, I don't know, did it to herself and then he freaked out and left. But if he wasn't really Eduardo, why would he lie about who he is?
Another thing that's weird is, I didn't mention this. Sorry about this. They believe the woman died on June 3rd, which is the same day Eduardo allegedly checked in, right? So last we know, he comes in there on June 3rd, gets a room for two. It specifically specifies he rents a room for two people for one night. He doesn't check out, and he's not there. So,
but the fact that he gave true information, true personal information to book the room, and he booked a room for two people, feels like it was intentional. Like he did not have bad motives at the time when he booked it.
Also, can we talk? Yeah. Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off.
No, that's okay. No, I was just saying that I'm just speculating, but I feel like he met her and they decided to get together and have a good time together. And then maybe something went wrong.
Yeah. Because like, did she fly? If this tip is right, did she fly over to Albuquerque for the sole reason of meeting him? Or was it more like she went to Albuquerque and like they met somewhere else to party or whatever? And then this happened.
Yeah, because in 1991, how would she know a random guy in Albuquerque?
Mm-hmm.
Unless they were already, I don't know, they had met for some other reason. And they knew that's each a other good point. Well.
Yeah, that's a good point. What I also find is interesting, and look, I'm not accusing anybody, right? I don't know anything about this. I'm curious why they didn't suspect this Eduardo guy of killing her. They said she committed suicide. But look, again, it's totally plausible that it was suicide. Maybe there was a way they indicated that, but it's just like it's interesting. And why did she choose to end her life in that way at that time? I mean, I guess you can't get in someone's head, but
does heroin make you paranoid? I don't know.
I don't think so. From whatever everything I've read, I think it's just like a depressant, and it's kind of like a downer, and it gives you like a feel, just like a high, like a euphoric high. And they specifically she died because she hanged herself. I mean, she didn't die from an overdose or anything like that. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's weird. And then the scale with the name. Go ahead. Let me shut up. Go ahead.
I mean, maybe they partied together and then she killed herself and then he just got freaked out and ran because he didn't want to be a suspect.
Yeah.
Maybe he's not involved at all. It's interesting that he left the scale with this somebody's name just plastered really obviously on it. Did they ever track down the George Martinez?
I don't think so. I don't think so, because that's probably a very common name. Unfortunately, it's very limited info. But I feel like this could be solved. I mean, it seems like they're on the right path to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's got to be maybe in somebody's circle a George Martinez that would lead to more information. I mean, was Eduardo George Martinez who used Eduardo's information?
Maybe, but
did they know each other? I don't know.
With his name right there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Maybe they invited George over to party and he just left.
What do you guys make of the fact that this paragraph in and of itself is the thing that gets me the most about this whole thing? Okay. This is from the website I quoted earlier, the unidentified wiki. It would be several years before Eduardo's family could be located. By the time they had been discovered, he had died several years prior due to natural causes. Eduardo's family were shown the photograph of the pair. They confirmed that Eduardo was not the man in the picture and had no idea who the woman was. So that gets me because it's like, why did the hotel people say that it was Eduardo? But the family did said it wasn't. Was it not Eduardo who checked into the hotel and somebody who used Eduardo's information? Or was it Eduardo's family knew he was up to some stuff and didn't want to, and he was dead and they're like, I don't want any part of this, you know, whatever. That's not him.
I feel like it will be a way to prove, like, if it really wasn't him, you know, like if there's an obituary and they had a picture of him in there, maybe that showed that it didn't match the guy in the picture.
That's a good point.
Or they had pictures at their house and were like, yeah, this is him. Like,
mm-hmm.
You could see that it's not the same person.
Yeah. It's just an intriguing story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that's all I got on this one.
Thanks.
Any last thoughts or theories before we move on to the next? I'll just say that this woman, Becca, okay, so she was 5'7", white or possibly of Hispanic descent. They believe she's between 25 and 35. She had curly strawberry blonde hair, hazel or gray eyes. No notable tattoos, scars, marks. She did have heroin in her system at the time of death. She wore a multicolored bikini underwear, multicolored tank top, the Trends brand, white denim slacks, 3 white metal earrings, wide metal bracelet. She had a dark blue or black suede purse and a patterned pocketbook. They were able to eliminate 14 missing. Like, so they investigated the possibility that Becca was one of 14 missing people and they ruled them all out.
Oh, okay.
So I feel like they could get this. I feel like they could solve this one. It seems like they have just enough. Especially with this tip, I would just love to know more about this. So
yeah, I'm curious how a tip came forward like 30 years later.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very curious about it as well. So maybe I'll reach out and see what I can find out and I'll keep you posted.
Yeah.
The next one I have for you is a John Doe. And it's kind of, it's at least among like unsolved mystery, true crime folks, it's pretty popular from what I understand. Has anyone heard of the Peter Bergman case out of Ireland?
No.
Okay. So this is a pretty cryptic one as well. Like I said, we're going all the way across the pond to Ireland. And this is June 16th, 2009. Okay. A man named Arthur Kinsella is training for a triathlon with his son Brian at Ross's Point Beach near a town called Sligo. And this is in Ireland, like I said. It's 6:45 a.m. local time. They stumbled upon the body of a man lying on the beach. The man was wearing purple-striped Speedo-style swim trunks with a pair of underpants over them and a navy t-shirt tucked into them. Sadly, the man was deceased. Now, Arthur and Brian said the Lord's Prayer upon discovering the man, and then they called police. Little did everyone know that tracking this man's movements up until the discovery of his body would lead to far more questions than answers.
Oh.
So let's go back. This guy was discovered early Tuesday morning, right? Mm-hmm. June 16th. We're going back to Friday, June 12th, which is the first time this man is spotted. This was at the Ulster Bus Depot in Derry, sometime between 2:30 and 4 p.m. I'm doing the best with these locations. Obviously, I'm not in any way familiar with Ireland. But this is what has been reported. So he's seen at the Ulster Bus Depot between 2:30 and 4 p.m. on Friday, June 12th. From there, he took a bus to Sligo and then a cab to the Sligo City Hotel. The man was just short of 6 feet tall. He was slender, tan. He had short gray hair and blue eyes. He wore a black leather jacket, blue trousers, socks, a black leather belt, and a pair of black shoes. Now, those who came in contact with the man said that he was very well groomed, and they said that the man seemed to be of Germanic descent and spoke English with a thick German accent. Okay. The man was also a smoker. He would frequently go outside the hotel to smoke, as was seen on surveillance. So when the man checked into the hotel, he used the name Peter Bergman, which would turn out to be fake. He also provided an address in Austria that, when looked into later, investigators determined was the address to a vacant lot.
Huh.
So at one point during his stay at the hotel, Peter, quote unquote, was seen on surveillance leaving the hotel with a bag of personal belongings. But when he returned, the bag was gone. Now, authorities believe that the man was disposing of his personal items throughout the city. And they said his movements seemed to be very calculated, as if he knew which cameras to avoid to hide what he was doing.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. So continuing along with Peter's movements, he goes to the local post office on Saturday, June 13th. He buys 8 stamps and airmail stickers. That's all we have for Saturday. On Sunday, June 14th, Peter leaves the hotel between 11 and 11:30 a.m. and asks a taxi driver for recommendations on a nice quiet beach where he could swim. The driver recommended Ross's Point, which, as we said, would be where his body would be found 2 days later. However, this isn't the time that he would die at the beach, because the taxi driver took him to the beach. He took the same taxi back to the hotel.
Oh.
Or excuse me. The same driver picked him up at the beach and took him back to Sligo at the bus station. Okay. So that's Sunday. Still with me?
Yes.
So he went back to the bus station?
Yes. So this is on Sunday. He leaves late morning, asks for recommendations for a nice quiet beach to swim on. The driver recommends this Ross's Point. He goes there, swims, takes the same cab back to Sligo.
Okay.
Okay. So now we're going to Monday. That's Sunday. So now we're going to Monday, June 15th. And this is the day that Peter checks out of the hotel. And he does this around 1 p.m. He hands in his room key. He has a black shoulder bag and a purple plastic bag and a different luggage bag than the one he checked in with.
Oh.
And now here's where we have some strange behavior from Peter. Okay. He leaves the hotel. He makes a stop at Quayside Shopping Center, but he does not go in. He kind of awkwardly hangs out in the doorway for several minutes. He eventually leaves and heads to the bus station. And at this time, he still has all his bags. Around 1:40 in the afternoon, he orders a cappuccino and a toasted ham and cheese sandwich. He sits and eats his food. He pulls, as he's eating his food, he pulls pieces of paper from his pocket. Okay? Pieces of paper from his pocket. And after he reads the papers, he tears them up and throws it into a nearby trash can. And he keeps doing this with pieces of paper, right?
Okay.
He then boards a bus that leaves at 2:20 p.m., which is bound for Ross's Point Beach. And he's last seen by several people walking along the beach. Fast forward to Tuesday morning, early that day, they find his body. Okay?
Hmm.
Now, before I talk about what was found in his autopsy and some other details, what do you guys think so far? Because I feel like I'm just blah, 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 blah.
Well, he's definitely involved in something sketchy.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's, like, coordinating a handoff of something with somebody.
Right. What makes you say that?
Well, the leaving, arriving with different luggage than he leaves with. And that odd behavior is as if he was, like, looking for someone to do some handoff or get more information about something on what his next move should be.
Okay.
Maybe he was being blackmailed or something.
Maybe. All right, well, why don't I share with you the last bit of info I have, and then we'll go from there.
Okay.
Because it may change your thoughts. I may not. Okay. So although he's found on the beach, right? He's found dead on the beach. There's actually no evidence that the man drowned. His death was ruled as cardiac arrest. Okay.
That's weird.
Now, there's also no signs of foul play. Okay. Another detail. It was noted that the man clearly received dental care throughout his life. But despite his teeth being in great condition, here's the sad, heartbreaking part. The man was shown to have advanced stages of prostate cancer.
Oh.
And he had bone tumors, and his heart had shown signs of heart disease.
Oh, wow.
Now, So they estimated him to be between 55 and 60 years old.
Okay.
Okay. Before I show you this, there is one more small detail. So he had advanced stage prostate cancer and he had signs of heart disease. He had bone tumors. The crazy part is he had no medicine in his system. And so it was determined that he would have been in like horrible pain without medicine, given his condition. Like, at minimum, he should have had something over the counter, but he had nothing in his system. No medicine. Okay. Now, there is a photograph of the man after death.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys want to see it or not? I don't have to show it to you.
Sure.
Yeah.
In my opinion, it just looks kind of like he's sleeping. It's not like, it's upsetting because you know he's not alive, but...
Yeah.
It's not like super graphic, right? But just to show you what he looked like, that's him.
Oh.
I won't be posting. This is literally available on the Wikipedia page for this case.
Wow.
And I don't personally see. Yeah, it's not even like click here for the photo. It's literally just like on the page. Now, the photo isn't that graphic. Would you guys agree?
No, it's not.
But I'm still not going to post it on my Instagram because I don't want to do that unless people want to see it. So it's available. Yeah,
that's probably not necessary. It's easy enough to find, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's Peter. That's the Peter Bergman case. And despite, as of this year, he's still unidentified. He has no relatives or friends that have come forward, no witnesses. They looked in Austria and Germany. They blasted his information in newspapers, but nothing. Nothing was found. So after 5 months of investigating this and coming up empty-handed, they buried the man in Sligo. And the funeral was attended by four Gardaí, which is what the Irish police. But that's what we've got. They have his DNA on file. That's what we have. That's what we have about Peter Bergman. So what do you guys think of this one?
Well, now I'm kind of taking a total 180 from my original hypothesis. I'm still confused as to how and why he'd have two different suitcases.
Yeah.
Was that on video or was that just the memory of the hotel staff?
I believe both. I can actually pull up, if you guys are interested, I can pull up some video footage we have of him. Remember, this is from 2009, so it's not like Soups.
High def.
Yeah, thank you for finishing my sentence. I can't. I have a bad habit of doing that. I'm like, blah, blah, blah. So I'll give you my theory.
Yeah,
I think the man, perhaps he had no family. And he knew he had this disease and he knew it was terminal given like the advanced state of it.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps this trip was him, you know, getting rid of his stuff. And I mean, he clearly died. He just died. Like his heart stopped working. It's not like he ended his life, but I just wonder if he knew he was going to die and he wanted his life to be ended by like him swimming or in a beautiful place or a peaceful place. Yeah. You know, and maybe him getting rid of his stuff was just kind of a way to, because he knew he wasn't going to be alive or something. I don't know. So
yeah,
I don't know.
I had the same thought as you, that maybe he felt he knew that he was going to die and he wanted to find somewhere peaceful for that to happen. And he didn't want to, you know, he wanted to just get rid of his personal effects, I guess, mm-hmm. on his own and have some ownership of it and some control in these last moments of his life. I'm curious about the postage stamps he bought and if he sent out letters and to whom. If he had no family.
Yeah.
And no one to identify him. Like, he felt important enough to send out 8 letters to people, but none of those 8 people reached out to identify him. I don't know. Unless he wasn't sending letters to people, it could just be something, I don't know, something else that just ties up loose ends.
Yeah, like, did he pay a bill or something? Like, that might sound stupid, but.
Yeah, maybe just paying some last bills or something. Mm-hmm. That could be.
Although I'll tell you that right now, that's going to be the last of my concerns, is paying my damn bills if I'm, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I would be the same way. But maybe perhaps, if he just was trying to be responsible, I don't know.
Yeah, perhaps he didn't want to burden people. Yeah.
Even strangers.
Or maybe he did have some acquaintances or someone. Maybe he asked. See, here's the thing. Maybe he sent letters to certain people and he indicated in those letters that his final wishes were to remain unidentified. But then again, you would still think somebody would talk.
Right.
Yeah.
Why would you want to be unidentified?
Yeah. I don't know. I really don't. But the vibes I get from this one are, I don't get sinister vibes. I get vibes that this man was obviously suffering. He knew he was going to pass. And so he was just like taking care of some last final things before that happened.
Yeah.
Doesn't stop people from speculating.
Mm-hmm.
Hence the reason right. we're here.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't know.
So that's Peter Bergman.
That's a really sad one. And it just leaves me thinking, like, how, if you have a terminal disease, how well do you know, or how well can you sense how much time you have left? I don't know.
I mean, perhaps he didn't know it was going to be. It is curious how he checked out of his hotel and then died.
Yeah.
Later that day, presumably.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who knows? Maybe he.
Yeah.
Maybe he just went swimming until he couldn't do it anymore.
Maybe, and maybe just the act of swimming was too much on his heart in that last moment.
Yeah, maybe he just loves swimming and he wanted a peaceful place to swim. And
yeah,
I don't know, man.
I
agree, though. It's very sad. All of these cases are sad, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you one. This isn't on my list, but this is a very sad case. Okay. I mean, because things like this happen. It's, if we're talking about Jane Doe's, right?
Yeah.
And John Doe's. So this is a woman that called herself Mary Anderson. And she, it was a pseudonym. She was found in a hotel room in Seattle. And she committed suicide.
Oh,
so she reserved the room. She paid for cash. She put the name Mary Anderson on her check-in. And she left a note behind. So basically she consumed a mixture of Metamucil and cyanide. She left a note that said, quote, "To whom it may concern, I have decided to end my life and no one is responsible for my death. Mary Anderson, P.S. I have no relatives. You can use my body as you choose." Which I cannot think of anything sadder than that.
Wow.
So, I mean, things like this do happen. Like, and just to think that people are in that place, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So there are no shortage of these cases, which is just crazy. Now, they're unidentified for different reasons, right? But mm-hmm. it's still upsetting.
It's also crazy to think that no one was able to identify either one of them. Like, even if you outlive your family,
mm-hmm.
you know, like friends, even if you've had a falling out with your friends, you know, you think they remember years later, or like if you have a job at a place of employment, your coworkers will recognize you. Just everywhere you go in your daily life, there must be so many people who would recognize me.
Right. Like I worked with her. I saw her. Yeah. Like, agreed. Yeah. And that's, I think, what's so fascinating about these cases, because, you know, not to bring this whole, you know, privilege thing into it, but, you know, these people, I guess they're just people in the world that don't have anyone, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or for whatever reason, the people won't come forward.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Well, this next one I'm going to talk to you guys about, and this is the last one I have on my list here.
Okay.
Unfortunately, there's not a ton of details left, or there's not a ton of details for this particular case. But I think it's worth mentioning again. I actually did an episode on this woman. Oh. I did episode 42. If you'd like to listen to her full story, but given that she's going to be unidentified for 30 years as of this year, I think it's worth mentioning again. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. Cat's going crazy in the background. Okay. So it was 30 years ago, on May 24th, 1994, that a body of a young woman was found in an alley on the south side of Chicago. She had been raped and strangled, and her mostly naked body was discarded in this alleyway, like trash, essentially. Now, this is a unique situation because, unlike the cases we've already talked about, well, for one, she was murdered, and two, her killer was actually caught and charged, but she is unidentified, still unidentified. Yeah. So like I said, if this sounds familiar to anyone listening, episode 42, I, you know, delved into this one. Now, this piece of garbage by the name of Gregory Klepper was responsible for her murder.
Ugh.
Okay. He was charged on May 2nd, 1996. He was charged with strangling 8 women.
Oh my gosh.
And he typically preyed on women that were drug addicts or prostitutes who he would then murder. Oftentimes when a conflict would arise, when he refused to pay the women or something like that. And his thing was, he liked to strangle these women. And he confessed to killing this particular woman that we're talking about. Now, all of his victims have since been identified, and this one is the only one that has not been identified. Now, this is a Black female. She's estimated to be between 18 and 22 years old. This douchebag Klepper said he picked her up at 63rd Street and Kimbark Avenue. So anyway, he claims he picks her up at this intersection. He claims that she's a sex worker, but police are saying it's possible the woman was just hitching a ride and he just said that, you know, yeah. To kind of, not that like, yeah. Not that sex workers are not worthy of care and justice.
Right. But
for whatever reason, it said like police believe that he may be lying about that and that she just simply needed a ride. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now let me show you this. So this is a reconstruction of the Chicago Jane Doe. Now she had short black hair worn in a ponytail with a black ribbon, brown eyes, pierced ears. Now here's really sad. They believe she had given birth to at least one child in her life because she had stretch marks and a 6-inch scar on her abdomen.
Oh.
Meaning there's a child somewhere that...
Oh, God.
Yeah. Now, there is a post-mortem photo of this woman available. Certified scumbag Gregory Klepper is on year 28 of his 80-year sentence. He's never going to see the light of day again. But good. as I said in my episode 42, again, go listen to it. He still has his name and he still has a life, unlike this poor woman. And for whatever reason, no one's come forward to identify her. So there may be a child out there that doesn't know what happened to their mother.
Mm-hmm.
Well, who knows if the child was in her life? You know what I mean? Like, no one knows her circumstances,
right.
But nobody's ever come forward to identify her, which is awful.
That makes you wonder, horrifying. That makes you wonder too. Like, where are they from? Did she like run? If she was looking for a ride, did she run away from somewhere? And her picture's just not like reaching the right places.
That's a great point.
Maybe.
Yeah.
That's a great point.
They blasted it, I think, at the time. I'm definitely going to post a photo of her, of, you know, the reconstruction photo, reconstructed mm-hmm. photo, obviously. Because it's not going to hurt. I mean, what I find, this may be a good way to wrap this or tie a bow on this episode, is a lot of people who had been previously unidentified for years are starting to get identified because of new technology.
Right.
Okay. Which, that is good.
For example, there was this guy who went by the name of Lyle Stevic. He, another situation where he checked into a hotel, and I'll spare the details. He ended his life in the hotel. And we could talk about that one. But again, he went to lengths to hide his identity. He was actually identified. Now, this happened in, let's see. He died on September 16th, 2001. Okay. And he was identified on May 8th of 2018.
Wow.
And this was done via the work of genealogists. The family made the decision, which I think is fine, they don't want to identify him publicly to protect him and their own privacy. But he has been identified. And so things like that are happening. I think it's possible. I think it's unlikely in certain cases, but like, for example, Becca, the first woman we talked about, I think that's likely to be solved. If they had a tip as recently as 2021, they think she flew in from somewhere. I mean, I've got to imagine that it's possible.
Well, I was just looking to that case. Have you heard about that one, the boy in the box?
I've heard of it. I haven't looked into it extensively. Would you like to share?
Yeah, can you give a summary of that one?
They found his remains in a box in Philadelphia in 1957. And now, after 65 years, they identified who he was.
That's right.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And how did they identify him?
It was through DNA.
See? This is the brief, like, awesome. The technology. I mean.
Yeah. It said he was only 4 when he died. And then after nearly 66 years, they identified who he was. And I think they, like, reached out to his family and they didn't know what had ever happened to him. And
wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like I've been looking through cases to talk to you guys about today and ones that I previously had looked at are now identified, which is just, it just doesn't bring them back, but it's at least some form of justice. So
yeah, it's something. Absolutely.
All right. Well, I'm going to post information about all these people on all the usual platforms. But any final words before we tie a bow in this one?
That was really, I don't know, that was heavy.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Sad. It's very sad.
It's really upsetting.
If you want more of 1 minute and 43 seconds, you can find me at 143mysteries.com. You can find me on Instagram at 143mysteries. You can find me on Twitter at 143podcast. You can find me at YouTube at 143mysteries. Check me out. Hit the like, hit the subscribe, share these stories. Thanks, guys, for being here.
Thanks.
Thank you.
One minute and 43 seconds is dedicated to my number one fan. Thanks, Dad. I love you and I miss you. This podcast has been approved by Skipper the Cat. Right, Skippy.